You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Second hour begins now, and our next guest is well into his second season at South Carolina. Already some very impressive wins this year early in the year, Virginia Tech and so many other games Notre Dame. And this year, just in the last couple of weeks, win at Arkansas, win at Missouri, and the one last night that everybody in college basketball is talking about. We just showed it, the stunner against the University of Kentucky. The crowd went wild. And Coach, thank you very much for joining us. I know you have more work to do. There are games to be played, but today had to be wild. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it. But yeah, it was a wild day. This is our off day, actually, just because we play Tuesday, Saturday this week. But it doesn't seem like much of an off day. But as you can imagine, the city of Columbia and the entire campus was a buzz today. And so it's great for our guys just to be able to walk around campus and enjoy that experience. So it was electric in there last night, and we're really excited.
Certainly much was expected this year. Last year, just kind of getting your bearings after coming over from Chattanooga. But did you sense it with a couple of road wins in the SEC that maybe that Kentucky could be taken down? And they've been a really good team this year.
Yeah, they have been. They're really talented offensively. I mean, extremely talented. It was great offense that they have versus we've had some really good defense this year. And honestly, I mentioned this before in an interview that our goal was just to try to present the best defense that they had ever gone against this year to that team, which has some young guys on it, and just see how that played out and see what that did to some of their guys in the environment that we had created in this last game and really all season. And so, you know, I thought if we did that and presented that kind of defense to them and just were relatively efficient on the offensive end, you got to make some shots. They're going to score, so you got to make some shots. If we could make some shots, I thought we had a chance.
Coach, we all know who Kentucky is, and John Calipari is, you know, a million times over a Hall of Fame coach with championships and Final Fours. But when you're getting ready for a game like that, you've already been on the road to a couple of very tough places. How do you keep your players? Forget the crowd, because they're always going to get up for Kentucky. But just, you know, get your players grounded and go, listen, this is our game plan. Don't worry about what color the other guy's uniform is.
Yeah, it's difficult because, you know, these guys, when they were young, they've always followed Kentucky as one of the blue bloods. And no matter what corner of the earth that they are from, they've been familiar with Kentucky. So, you know, now they're in there competing with them. And we just try to stay focused on what we're doing, on the mission that we are on now. And we talk a lot about just be who we are. We are who we are, and we do what we do. And so, honestly, all of our focus went into that. You know, we had a couple of days to prepare for Kentucky, but we did it in a one-day prep. We spent one day completely dedicated to us and the things that we needed to improve upon to be the best version of our team. And then we had one day of full prep for Kentucky. So really that was kind of the mindset that we were in, was just to focus on us and be who we were and go out there and do what we do. And, you know, we got a team that really believes in what we do and who we are, and they like who we are. They enjoy playing together. So if we can continue to do the things we do defensively, they are a very, very confident group.
So, Coach, I'm watching the game, and it's a good game, and all of a sudden, explosion. Offensively, your team just really – and you get this big lead, and you always worry when you're playing a team like Kentucky or one of the top teams in the country. You've got this big lead. What do you do then? Take us through the second half a little bit and trying to maintain, and you did, obviously, but I'm sure there are a lot of things going on in the back of your mind.
Yeah, no, it's difficult. You know, one of the most difficult things to do in college basketball is to play when you have a lead. You know, you want to continue to be aggressive. That's what got us a lead. But at the same time, you want to be smart. You don't want to do anything reckless and have, you know, 6-point play turnarounds, 3 or 4 that you didn't get, and then 2 or 3 that they did get. So that's always a delicate situation, but our guys handle it well. I think we continue to stay aggressive. I think what didn't change was what we were doing defensively. But you get a team like Kentucky that's has that much offensive firepower, you know a run's coming. You expect a run is coming. So honestly, at every single timeout, every break in the action, every review of any play that was over there, all we continued to do was to remind the guys to stay the course of what we were doing defensively and having success with the defensive side. And then on the offensive end, just play free and be smart. But it's a real challenge when you get in a game like that against a team that's that talented and has that much firepower to continue to maintain a lead like that.
Coach, I've never heard anybody win a game at home and not say the crowd played a role. How big of a role? It's simply open for conversation. But what did you sense from that crowd as it got louder and finally it just exploded?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I'm in the game, I'm normally in a cocoon. I don't really notice the crowd too much, but it was so wild in there. It was impossible not to. But I know the guys feed off of that. And I think in 2024, more than ever, guys like to and need to feel good to perform well. And any little thing that happened, and our fans are intelligent basketball fans. And so when there was a stop that really needed to be had or a rebound that was secured, or certainly if there was a dunk or a three or something like that, they got up. They were very loud. And honestly, our guys feed off of that so much. It's hard to quantify what the home crowd does, but there's no doubt in my mind that that home crowd, and as electric as it was, had such an impact on not only what our guys did, but you get a young group like Kentucky, as talented as they are, they got a lot of young guys, and that's probably the first time that specific type of environment that they've been in and been down.
We saw a tweet late last night from Harris Pastides, who his legendary president. He said, "I paid a fine for storming the court after beating Kentucky before, but this time it was free for me, so I joined the crowd. Best students anywhere." The fine will come. That is not your problem, I know, and I'm sure that the university is pretty happy about it. So when something like that, when you do, maybe you've already gotten the word, but I know you're supposed to care, but do you really?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you a couple of things. One, Harris Pastides has probably never been so happy to be retired and be the president and to not have to deal with that. But I tried with a little time on the clock. I called a timeout. We wanted to stop the clock, and I was going to make an announcement to the crowd just so that the teams could get off and off the floor and be away from that, so that there weren't any incidents that could happen. But it didn't work out that way. John's been in this situation before. He's a seasoned veteran, so he had his guys, I think, off the court. But I wasn't going to tell them not to storm the court. I mean, I'll tell you that. I wasn't going to tell them. They go to school. These students, this is part of the whole experience for them. This is part of the reason why some of them came to a university like this. And so could you imagine telling them not to go out there and enjoy that experience? They were running around. I saw videos later. They were jumping in a pond that we have on campus, on a fountain. And it just was how fun to be them. Really fun.
Coach, I'm sure it's been mentioned before, but you're part of the worst loss in modern Kentucky history, and now another one of those when you were an assistant at Wisconsin in that 2015 Final Four that ended a perfect record. That every time I go to Lexington, Coach, I still hear about that game. I know that wasn't foremost in your mind, but that had to be quite an experience as an assistant coach.
Oh, that was unbelievable. As you look at that team, and we knew how special that Kentucky team was. I think anybody that wasn't living in a cave knew how special that team was. But then let's fast forward a couple years, 2-3 years later, and look at where those guys were in the NBA. And you had NBA all-stars on that team. You had NBA legends on that team. And so to be the team that took that team down, I think that was really special. And the thing that made it even more ridiculous was that Final Four in 2014-15 was a rematch from the Final Four in 2013-14, in which they beat us at the end of the game. So that group that we had at Wisconsin wanted nothing other than to play that Kentucky team again in the Final Four. And so it built up, you couldn't draw it up that way any better if you scripted it. And it built up to be such a special game and a special moment with so many special players out there that it's one of the highlights of my career for sure.
Coach, you're at a school where Dawn Staley has been such a trailblazer, such a seminal coach in all of basketball. And when you were hired, it was noted that you were the first person of color. But what has it been like on that campus with her and in the environment where so much change has already been made?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's really significant. We just this year celebrated, I think it was the 60th year of desegregation at the university. And so that was exciting, as just to see how far that we've come. It's been amazing. But to have Dawn here with me and all of our coaches here, honestly, but Dawn is a trooper. Dawn's a champion. And I don't even mean that just in terms of wins and losses on the basketball court. I think we all can see that. But just as a human being, as a leader, as a molder of young people, she's been fantastic. And she was, you know, when they came back, I got hired and they won the national championship that year. And we come back, and right outside of Colonial Life Arena where we play, they had a little event, a celebration, and she brings me up there. And I mean, imagine winning the national championship, and you're going to come up and talk about a new coach. But I think she understood the significance of the hire. She's a big-time person and just wanted to wish me well and get the embrace of this entire city. So I tried to interrupt her and tell her, hey, not on this day. Tomorrow, if you want to do that, you can go ahead and do that, but not today. This was her moment and their day as a team. But she's a big time person. I call her a friend, and I'm proud to call her a friend and a neighbor, actually. But she's just a great person. And it's great to be here and working in the same athletic department.
Coach, I know when a game like that ends, you're probably drained, but there's so many things happening. Take us through the aftermath of that, through this moment, in terms of the calls, the texts. Who knows what your life has been like since 9 o'clock last night?
Yeah. A lot of media. I mean, there's been a lot of media, but even on the aside from that, you talk about calls and texts, messages. So from the time that the game ended to the time I got back to my phone, there were about 100 messages, new messages. And little did I know that was the tip of the iceberg. So by the time from the time I went to bed last night to the time I woke up this morning, there was a crazy amount more. And then throughout the day, it's just been a lot of people care. A lot of people notice. There were only a couple games on yesterday, so I guess that worked in our benefit as well. But a couple interviews this morning, radio interviews. Tried to watch the game again and make some clips. We always watch film the next practice after the game, so I did that. But the bulk of what today has been just managing and getting back to a lot of the people that have reached out.
Well, if we could just let you go, thank everybody individually here, but we know you don't want to do that. you do want to get back to everybody. But Coach, thank you for making time for us on such an important day. And I think everybody in college basketball was pretty fired up, other than that one state up north.
Yeah. That's okay. The masses might have been happy about it. So, but I appreciate you having me on the show, Paul. It's a good show. You do great stuff, not just for the SEC, but particularly for the SEC. So I'm happy to be here, We got a good group. I'm glad that the world was able to see what we're doing down here. And we're just, we're building. We're building. We're not there, that's for sure. And so we'll continue to try to do that as we move forward. But thank you. Appreciate your time. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much. Congratulations, Coach. What an amazing night that was on a Tuesday night in Columbia, South Carolina. We'll get back to your phone calls right after this.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. As we roll on, really had a fun conversation with Coach Paris. Let's get back to our calls, and Dwayne is up next.
Hey, man, what everybody got to say, tell you, you're doing a great job and all that. You know, ask that man some hard questions, man. But look at here, I want to tell you something right now. Hey, see, tomorrow night, the Atlanta Tigers are going to roll over Don Stanley and the Gamecocks. We're going to pluck the Gamecocks tomorrow night. Now, you tell them.
Oh, now, yo, you're a woman. You're a women's basketball fan now, Dwayne, now that you've given up on your football
gymnastics
program.
I watch it all. I watch gymnastics, softball, baseball, basketball, football. I watch it all, baby. Hey, you should have told that man. You should have told that man how LSU going to run over their butt tomorrow night.
He's the men's coach. That would be the women's coach.
I know he's the men's coach. But you should, hey, you asked about Don Stanley now. You asked the man about Don Stanley just a while ago, too. You should have told that man how Kim Mookie going to beat on Don Stanley. We owe them a butt whooping anyway. They beat him last year in South Carolina. We got this payback down, baby.
You're also pretty fortunate, Dwayne. You didn't have to play them in the NCAA championship game.
We wanted them then. They lost.
They lost to Iowa, yeah.
Yeah, they lost. They the one that lost. We'll wait for them then. But check this out, baby boy. We want them tomorrow. See, tomorrow night. You talking all that noise down there in the SEC country. Talking about you, how they like you and everything. I like you too, buddy. But look at him. You need to tell them straight that we're gonna whoop on them tomorrow. Tigers gonna whoop on them tomorrow. We gonna pluck that Gamecock. You ever ate Gamecock before? Huh?
I've never had one.
Yeah, you need to try it. Eat that bird. Pluck that bird. We gonna pluck that bird tomorrow. Hey, tell them that. Bye. That's all I gotta tell you, buddy.
You said you're gonna pluck that bird or something else? Hey, thanks, Dwayne. What did he say?
He's gonna pluck that bird.
Better not say that after a beer. David is up next. Hello, David. David, you there?
Hello.
Hey.
Yes, I'm here. Hey, hey.
I wanted to talk to you.
I just wanted to talk to you about this media around this country. Everything
okay,
I'm
let's talk about
right,
that dadgum media. What's the media been doing?
I guess they don't do their research. You know, because they talk about the implosion of Alabama football,
right,
how everything's falling apart. You know, and I just don't.
Hey, by the way, that's
it.
Just the Alabama fans who've been saying that, not the media.
Well, yeah. What
did Greg McElroy say today? Called them the Barstool Bubbas?
No, Bama's had 20 guys go into the portal. You know, six. DeBoer got there and gave a talk to the team. Yeah. How many of those actually played snaps?
I can think of a few. Like maybe. 10, 12, 15, maybe 20.
No, there's actually six that actually played significant time at Alabama.
Okay. Oh, I forgot. I wasn't counting the best quarterback in the country coming in that's already left.
Well, I question that, too. He's a five-star out of Carlsbad High School.
Yes, sir.
Did they do their research?
I think Nick Saban made a few trips out there to see him.
Well, he's a senior out of Carlsbad High School.
Yeah, I guess Saban doesn't know anything, does he? Not anymore. Hey, we'll take a short break here on the Bama Channel. More to come. We'll talk about Clemson's dynasty and what happened to it next.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This is from The Athletic. Will Clemson's decline continue, or can Dabo Swinney get the Tigers back? Just some unbelievable numbers. I mean, everybody here knows what Clemson did during that period when they literally met Alabama every year for the national championship, winning two of those games. Since then, it's been a different story. Not terrible, but dramatically inferior to what Clemson has done. Grace Rayner has covered the team for a while and just wrote this piece for The Athletic. Grace, thank you for being here. Really, really appreciate it. And you've seen this thing pretty up close for a number of years. Your takeaway in trying to figure out which direction is the Clemson Tigers are heading. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thanks so much for having me. It's been an interesting couple of seasons at Clemson for sure. I think in some ways, Dabo Swinney might be a victim of his own success, setting the bar as high as he did. But this is a little bit of a different program right now. This is a team that I think is in search of its next generational quarterback. I think Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson and T. Higgins and Travis Etienne righted a lot of wrongs and just sort of trying to find their footing now in this new era as they try to get back to the college football playoff.
And you know, some of it's quarterback, a lot of it's quarterback, obviously. Some of it's coaching personnel. We all know Brent Venables was a key part of it. He left. Dabo elevated some people. Didn't exactly work out. He also lost a couple of other key offensive people. Is there any way to point fingers in terms of, was it the exodus of a couple of assistants becoming, three assistants, in fact, becoming head coaches over a period of time on top of the loss of two generational quarterbacks?
You know, I think it's a mix of things. For sure, you lose those quarterbacks, and yeah, definitely. When you lose a coach of the caliber of Brent Venables, who goes to Oklahoma after 10-plus years at Clemson, you lose Jeff Scott, you lose Tony Elliott. I mean, these were really established, trusted voices in the room. And so I think that's part of it. Part of it is, you know, you're looking at the wide receiver room this year, and I think that production was down compared to years past. You look at the way that the transfer portal has changed college football. I think that's part of it. So I think it's a couple of different things. It's a nuanced situation at Clemson. I don't know that there's any exact finger pointing, but I think they're just trying to figure out, all right, what are the tweaks that they need to make? They feel like they have the talent to get back there, but just how do they tinker and figure out, all right, how can we be competitive at the level they once were?
And Grace, so many people have leveled criticism at Dabo for being slow to the portal, slow to NIL. And I know those arguments are clearly in the rearview mirror, but where is this program right now in relation to some of the most important things happening in college football?
Yeah, the portal one has obviously been the big talking point, right? Clemson still has not taken a transfer portal addition that played meaningful snaps, that came in and started. They've taken a couple of emergency quarterbacks, emergency depth guys. So that's what I think everyone is waiting for. I will say they're trying. I think that he's slowly come around a little bit more. He has gone after several offensive linemen. They targeted three or four just this cycle alone that went to, I believe, Maryland, Arkansas, Georgia Tech, just various places. And so I think that's what everyone's looking for is, all right, when do they make a portal acquisition that is going to come in and play some meaningful snaps and not just come in for backup purposes?
Let's talk about Dabo for a second, because, I mean, his record is pretty easy to figure out. Even in this so-called decline, it's respectable. It's not in last year. They got on quite a winning streak at the end. But while you can admire him on one level, why do you think, after having covered that program up close and now with a little bit of distance, he has been so resistant to the winds of college football?
Yeah, I think Dabo has always been a guy who's been very convicted in doing things the way he believes in. And you talk to people who know him well, and I think his loyalty to the people in the building and his loyalty to the way he thinks things should be done can sometimes be his greatest strength and his biggest weakness. And so you talk to people who know him, and I think it's one of those deals where, you know, Dabo is going to come around eventually, and he might not come around as quickly or as aggressively as his competitors or maybe even in the way the fans want him to, but he will get there. And I think he still has the track record that still gives him the benefit of the doubt. Clemson is still recruiting at a really high rate with high school prospects. But yeah, he's always done things his way. I don't think he cares a ton about what other people think about him. And I think he'll adapt in his own way as well.
On that subject, Grace, and it really didn't become an issue, but a lot of Alabama fans wondered, would he be up for consideration for the job when Saban left? We all know Dabo's track record. He played at Alabama. He's been a big part of that staff many years ago. Did you hear much, if anything, about whether he was ever considered for that job?
I don't know that I'm the right person to answer that question. I don't know what went on behind the scenes. I mean, obviously, I think if you look at Dabo and we're having this conversation 5 years ago, it's probably a slam dunk, right? You know, it's an obvious matriculation to get him in there, and he's probably their number one pick. But that's something that I'm going to be curious about one day, maybe when Dabo hangs it up, to say, all right, what was the deal back in the offseason of 2024? Did they make a run at you? Were you ever interested in it? We know Alabama is obviously a place that means a lot to him. He's been on record talking about how playing there and getting his college degree there changed his life. But in other ways, his home and his legacy are at Clemson. And in a lot of ways, I think Dabo Swinney is Clemson. So two places that mean a lot to him. But I'm curious to maybe see if we can figure out one day what the interest level on both sides might have been.
Grace, in terms of Dabo Swinney and the critics, you mentioned he doesn't ever seem to care, but this last year, that story, the radio program got so much news, and it felt like he ended up winning that battle, even though it was shocking at first. Can you address that part of Dabo Swinney's personality?
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the misconceptions about Dabo and what we see publicly is, you know, he has this big personality and a lot of people think that he's folksy and, you know, just what we see on TV. But behind the scenes, you talk to anyone who knows Dabo well, and this is a guy who is fiercely competitive. And that's one of the reasons why I think that he's not going to let this program slip, because his reputation and his name are on the line as well. But I think that's what we saw with that radio interview and that fan, Tyler from Spartanburg, was Dabo kind of firing back a little bit in defense of his players, in defense of his program. Obviously, that was a really emotional week at Clemson. It fired them all up. They beat Notre Dame a couple days after that. They go on a five-game winning streak to close out the season. But that's kind of the fiery, feisty side of Dabo that anyone who knows him well knows exists. But publicly, sometimes I don't know that we see that.
We saw something we didn't think we would see. Clemson missing the ACC championship game. Florida State moved into that and really was the talk of the ACC and really college football for a few weeks. Where do you see, just as you were reporting this story, where do you see Clemson next year in the pecking order?
I like where Clemson heads into 2024, just given the talent that they return. I think that's one of the upsides of them not really using the portal much, is that they're not losing anyone from the portal because they didn't have anyone from the portal. And so you look at FSU, and a lot of their talent is on their way out, whereas Clemson has Klubnik coming back for another year. I definitely think they have to get more production out of their wide receivers. I think that will be so critical. But they feel good about the pieces that they have. They're not losing much on offense outside of Will Shipley. This is a top 10 defense from this year with some key pieces back. Barrett Carter, the five-star linebacker, is back. So I like where they're at, and I like the way that they are positioned as they sort of head into the 12-team playoff.
Grace Rayner from The Athletic, a deep dive on Dabo Swinney's once indestructible program, which has clearly slipped in recent years. We'll take a short break. More of your phone calls, more guests. Ed Golden from Austin coming up in the next hour. We're back after this.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and glad to hear everything is good in Clemson land after talking to Grace there. Let's get back to the calls, and Mike is up next. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
We are well, thank you.
Good, thanks for taking my call. Just had a question. I know it's kind of speculation, but I was just wondering what you thought would have happened if Coach DeBoer had said, no, I'm going to stay in Washington.
That is an interesting predicament because according to a number of other reporters who covered that story, he was probably about the fourth choice. And I don't know if they had a fifth choice, or according to what Greg Byrne said, an A, B, C, or D.
Well, that's what I was wondering about because, I mean, I'd heard about, you know, Lenning and the guy at Florida State and all that, and I don't know if they ever officially said
I think conventional wisdom, Mike, is Lanning, Sarkisian, Norvell were all considered. I never heard what I would say was a legitimate other option. Some people said, what about Lane Kiffin? But I've always felt Lane Kiffin was a no-go from the beginning.
Would anybody like Glenn Schumann from Georgia or even Muschamp or any?
I think he's well respected, but I think the odds of going after an assistant coach were nil, even though some reporter put in Tommy Reese, which I think was a practical joke because there's no way anybody would have taken him seriously as a head coach.
Yeah, I just didn't know if there was like a division some other Division One.
No,
or Division
I don't
two,
think you can do that at Alabama,
job,
Mike.
But,
I know,
like, you know, has never been in that kind of a pressure cooker
no,
before.
No, it's. Maybe we'll have to wait for Greg Burns' memoirs, but. I don't know who else it would have been. It wasn't, with all due respect to our previous guest, it wasn't Dabo Swinney.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, that seemed to be
I mean, he would have created a firestorm.
Well, and even
I guess
Lane,
they could have gone to
know,
Athens and maybe offered Kirby Smart $30 million.
Do you think he would have gone, though? I mean,
no, no, I really don't. But I'm just, I mean, I would have said, Kirby, is there a number that would interest you?
Right. Right.
Anywhere but above 10 and below 50.
So Coach DeBoer was kind of in the driver's seat then, I suspect.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah.
And don't forget, Mike, the most obvious thing, the same agent was representing all the candidates.
See, and that. That's, I don't know. That's interesting. I'm not. I mean, that's really interesting. But I guess so.
I think Norvell, as I hear the story told, Mike, I think Norvell may not have been offered, but he was certainly considered. So I have a hard time believing Norvell, who got an extension, would have said no. So let me back up a second. I think it would have been Norvell.
Do you? Okay. Even
I think it was. Well, I mean, I think Lanning and Sark were off the board for a couple of reasons, mainly money. I think DeBoer was maybe. I think I said fourth. I'd say third, and then Norvell would have been the backup. There is no way Norvell would have chosen to stay at that cesspool in Tallahassee over going to Tuscaloosa.
Well, I thought of that too. I thought would he would have welcomed a chance to get out of there. I would suspect.
No, there's just no way. And, yeah, it was just coincidental that Norvell got a contract extension right as DeBoer was jumping on the plane in Florida, in Washington State.
Yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate you taking my call. I've been thinking about it, and I thought, was there a plan D or E or whatever it was? And if so, who that might have been. And,
well, hey, thank you for the call. Really good question, Mike. Great to hear from you. Jim is up next in Knoxville. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Paul. How are you today?
We're doing great. Thank you.
I found it interesting, the little piece you did on Tim Couch, from quarterback from Kentucky, who just got it. I guess he's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, the College Football Hall of Fame.
But many years ago, I used to work in a grocery store after school. And there was this lady came in that had these two beautiful daughters, one of which I totally fell in love with. And it just so happened that that's who Tim Couch married.
Yeah, so, he. This was back right after he got out of school?
Correct.
Yeah, she was a. Yeah. I'll try to say this without, because I don't think they're married anymore. But I believe she was the Playmate of the Year.
That I don't know.
Yeah.
I do know, her last name was Johnson, and she was from a little town called McRoberts, Kentucky, which is way down in eastern Kentucky on the Virginia border, and. I used to.
Well, what did you say her name was?
Her last name was Johnson. I think.
Okay, because I looked at her. His first wife was named Heather Kozar, and she was the Playboy's Playmate of the Month and Playmate of the Year. Does it really matter if you're Playmate of the Month? Isn't that enough? You have to be Playmate of the Year. His second, the lady he's married to now, I believe, was related to one of his coaches in Cleveland.
That's interesting because now they were, I don't know that he ever married her, but he was visiting, and one of my best friends lived three doors down. He said, let's go down and meet Tim Couch and get a football autograph. So I said, sure, let's go. So I went down, met him, got a football, and, of course, got to see the girls. And it was just something I'll always remember. He was a great guy, somebody he had never met.
Yeah, well, this lady grew up in Ohio. I don't know if that helps your story at all, but that's all I know about her.
Yeah, well,
I vaguely remember meeting her, though. I interviewed Tim once up in Lexington, and she was around. And I'll say this. I mean, when somebody is like the Playmate of the Year or the Miss Whatever, people, I mean, that's all you hear. You don't really hear that she grew up, the son of a UMW worker or something. I mean, it's and you try to look past. I mean, you try to look at the positive things, that she's a nice young woman that used to go to the library and sell Girl Scout cookies, but somehow when you're on The Price is Right and you're the Playboy of the month, of the Playboy, the Playmate of the Year, it tends to overshadow your community service.
Well, that's very true.
By the way, I'm glad she married Tim Couch instead of Hugh Hefner, based on that book that just came out. Hey, thanks for the call, Jim. We are up against the break, and we'll be back after this message.
Thank you for listening to the Best of the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. Watch the Paul Feinbaum Show weekdays from 3 to 7 Eastern on the SEC Network. Plus, you can listen and watch on the ESPN app.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.